much for joining me and my guest today. This is Hashtag No Limits, and Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will become. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is not a better, more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For those who don't know, a little science lesson here, the caterpillar literally dissolves into cells in the cocoon. While it's in the cocoon, it then reforms itself into the butterfly. But that's not all the struggle it has to go through. It has to work its wings in the cocoon in order for them to be strong enough to fly once it comes out as the butterfly. I can't imagine any of that is easy. In fact, I imagine that is a very difficult process to go through, but so is busting through limits that society places on a person. And I am super excited today to share Michael with you. I found Michael through LinkedIn, I think, or maybe Facebook. I can't remember. I stalked him for a while, and then I reached out and said, hey, I would love to have you as a guest. Would you please join me? And he graciously said yes. And so thank you for joining me, Michael. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing very well today.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Very cool. So, Michael, go ahead and introduce yourself. Give a little bit more information about who you are and why I sought you out.
I'm Michael, and I was born with a cerebral palsy. I was born in New York back in the 80s, and when I was born, the umbilical cord wrapped around my neck, but I lost oxygen, and I came out, and I was really, my mom and dad said that I came out looking blue or purple. Oh, wow. Because I had lost so much oxygen, and, you know, they rushed me to the, you know, back room, and you know, I was my mom and dad's first child, so, you know, they were pretty, they really didn't know what was happening, you know. And I was in the hospital for quite a while, but eventually I made it out, and I got diagnosed with a cerebral palsy, and you know, yeah, I got that I could say about that part about my story, but you know, fast forward to What I'm doing now is now I write books, I write devotionals, and that was, you know, quite a journey to get there too. But that's what I'm doing now. And one thing, you know, I know that you are a IEP coach, and I remember very well being in those IEP meetings at school, you know, with my mom and my teachers trying to come up with a plan, you know, and it could be very overwhelming, you know, and my mom really advocated for me, you know. And it's great that they have somebody like you that maybe don't know what they're getting into with that, you know?
Yeah, it is definitely an overwhelming process. And I found that to be the case for a lot of the parents of the students that I worked with. So I didn't tell you this, but I've been a special educator for about, and I know I only look like I'm 35, so I must have started when I was five. But I saw that with a lot of the parents, that it was a very daunting process. I happened to, you know, read it, work it, write it, every day. So to me, it was no big deal. But it is for anyone who doesn't know, it is a very daunting document. It's like having a, you know, reading through a mortgage or reading through a lease. There's a lot of technical jargon in there. There's a lot of things that are supposed to be happening that don't always happen. Most of the time they do, but not always. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, the big difference, I think, between an IEP and a mortgage and a lease is that an IEP deals with a person and a mortgage or a lease deals with an inanimate object. And so we have that extra piece in there to concern ourselves with. Yes. So you were born in the greatest decade, the 1980s. I was also born in the 1900s. I'm not going to tell you exactly when, but I like to, anytime I go in as a substitute or go in and do presentations for kids, I was like, I was born in the 1900s, you know, and it just, that just cracks them up because they just think that was so long ago. So you shared that the umbilical cord had been wrapped around you and that cerebral palsy comes from a lack of oxygen, but can you share what cerebral palsy does to the body and to the brain and kind of the effects of it, I guess.
Yeah, I always, you know, the kind of this joke of people say, we're like, you could take anything and say, well, if you met one blink, you met one blink. So if you met one person with CP, you met one person with CP, because right. it really does affect people differently.
Yeah, and so can you share how it affects you personally?
Yeah, so basically it's, you know, when the oxygen, you know, cut off my brain, that damage parts on my brain, and so CP normally will affect your motor functions in some way. So that could mean that I have, you know, spasms like this. I can't always control my body. It means I have speech impairments. It's just a lack of different motor functions of the body, you know?
Right.
And, you know, one thing I could say is that I met some people with CP that are a lot more severe than me. I've also met people that are very mild. And they could even do things like drive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say I'm pretty much right there in the middle of the severity, you know. I think, you know, and for me, I had a lot of physical therapy as a child. I had a lot of OT, and the biggest thing was I had a lot of speech therapy, and I really credit my speech therapist that I met down in Orlando when I was 7 years old. His name is Jeff, and he really helped me be able to speak.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say one thing about the school. When I came to school here, because we moved from New York to Orlando when I was 7 years old, and they wanted to give me a speaking device at school.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff, my speech therapist, he told my mom, like, do not let them do that, because if they give him a speaking device, he will never, you know, try to speak on his own. And that, I think, from what I am told, that was a big thing where the school, they really wanted that to happen. And my mom really had to, you know, stand her ground and say no. You know? And I think that, I know that was a very hard thing, you know?
Yeah, and I'm kind of on the opposite side, and I work with a lot of speech pathologists who said that's a myth. And so I'm glad it worked out for you, that it that you did continue to speak and learn how to speak. And I want to say that, because I don't want people... it's an individual option.
Yes.
And I don't want people to say, oh, you know, my child's not speaking, the school wants a device, he'll never learn to speak, or she'll never learn to speak. From my understanding, it's just as difficult. It's probably more difficult for most people to use a device. So they do want to learn to speak if they can. But I'm also not going to say absolutely always have a device, because obviously for you, that was the right decision.
Oh, yeah, you're right about that. You know, a device, that could be a way that they could get that independence too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that goes back to what I said about how everybody is different, and I guess that's why it's called an individual plan, right? Because everybody is different.
Right. So as you were describing cerebral palsy and its effects on you, and as you mentioned some others, and the kind of, you did that range of mild to severe, not one description did I hear you say anything about cognitive abilities. And so I have, in my own experience, I've worked with a few people who have had been diagnosed with cerebral palsy, and the way that they have been treated is as if they have cognitive disabilities. Did you ever have that experience as well?
Yeah, I've had that, and I want to say too that, you know, there can be cognitive disabilities in CP too, you know, because everybody is different. So some people with CP, they might have cognitive, you know, disabilities too, you know. But for me, it just, you know, it would mean physical, you know.
Right.
But I've had people that make assumptions about that, you know, or don't try to, don't speak to me in a way where I could tell that they don't think that I'm able to understand them, you know. And that's a very hard thing, because you don't want to, like, you don't want to get upset at them because they're doing the best they can, and you never know what they might have seen, you know, from somebody else, you know?
Right. Yeah, and honestly, that's one of the reasons that I do hashtag No Limits, is to try to bring that perspective and that awareness that just because someone's speech is different, or their walking ability or their mobility is different, or they, you know, whatever it is, that don't automatically assume that they are of lower intelligence. And something that I have seen, and I have a feeling has probably happened to you, but hopefully not, is that people will like baby talk to you.
Oh, yeah. I've had that a lot. It's kind of tough when it happens.
I would imagine.
I don't really want to embarrass them either. So like, what do you do? And actually, like, it might be a good thing for me to ask you because I don't really have a great solution for that. So what would you tell somebody?
Well, honestly, when I taught, it was something because I taught, you know, upper elementary students who actually the one student had a communication device and he was an eighth grader with the diagnosis of cerebral palsy. And there were people who baby talked him all the time. And I said, you wouldn't talk to any other seventh or eighth grader that way. Speak to him like you're speaking to the other seventh and eighth graders. I always felt that he understood what was being said. And even my students that supposedly had a lower cognitive ability level, I didn't baby talk to them either because they weren't babies. So, you know, that's me in the teacher sense. For you personally, I think just when you answer them to what, however they have spoken to you, if they've asked you a question and you respond, you know, hopefully that will change something in the way that they're talking to you. But, you know, maybe just saying, you know, I'm not 2 years old, I'm whatever age, or you can just say, and I'm adult, you know, please speak to me as you would any other adult. Because I do think it's I don't know how to talk to that person because that person is different than me. And so for whatever reason, we revert to baby talk.
People should know. Just assume everybody has the ability, and then you could always lower your cognitive speech if you find out that they don't understand. But it's easier to start at a higher level and go down than to have to go the other way.
That is a great point. That is absolutely a beautiful point. I love that. Yeah, that's absolutely, because you're right. I don't think you'll offend somebody if you think too highly of them.
I
really like that. So I want to just for a second here, take a few seconds. So we have Al Cox joining us from, and he posted in another one that he's from Northern Illinois. And he says that you're a man of God. So Al, thank you for commenting and for joining us today. We also have Patrick Jarvis, who says, hello, Patrick from Georgia. I'm here because Michael has been a huge blessing for my family. My wife, the past year and a half ago, me and my five young children use his books daily to help us find our way. Thank you, Michael. That's awesome. Thank you, Patrick, for joining us and for commenting. And then we have Fran from Southern Illinois joining us. Fran, thank you for joining us and hello to you as well. So Michael, growing up, so you said you went from New York to Florida. You remember having an IEP. Do you remember, because you were pretty young when you moved, if there was a big difference between New York setting schools and Orlando setting schools?
We lived in the Bronx in New York.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever been to New York or know that area. There was a school in Long Island which was about maybe about an hour away from us, that was a school that was specifically created for kids with disabilities.
Okay.
And they were like kindergarten to high school. So they were all ages. And so I went to that school for kindergarten and first grade. And that school was like an hour away. So it was like a long bus ride there.
Right.
Well, my parents just felt like, especially in the beginning, that might be a good school for me to go to, you know. And it was. It was a very good school, you know. It was good to see other kids with disabilities, you know. And then after that, my mom, she won a trip to Disney World.
Nice.
Yeah. And we came down here for a trip. We stayed for about a week. And then when we came back, my mom and dad decided to move. And we really liked Orlando. The weather was better for me here. It wasn't as cold, you know,
mm-hmm.
because I don't do good in the cold weather. And we moved here, you know, maybe about a year later, we ended up moving here. And that when I started second grade in a school, and this school was a school that had both kids with disabilities and also typical kids, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And out of my first experience would be in what they call mainstream, which I'm sure you have experience with that. So I would spend half of the day in a class with other kids with disabilities. And then the other half of the day, I went into the other class with the typical kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that from second grade all throughout elementary school.
Okay.
That was a good, I think that was a pretty good experience for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was able to get help with the things that I need help with. But also I was able to, you know, see what it was like, you know, to be in that typical classroom, you know.
Right. Yeah, so my opinion is everybody is an individual. So I am not a fan of the full inclusion movement, because that takes the individual out of it, in my opinion. And as we have mentioned multiple times here already, if you know one person with CP or autism or specific learning disability or traumatic brain injury or whatever, then you know one person with that.
Yeah.
And so to say that every person with a disability should be fully included into the general education classrooms, I don't agree with that, because that takes the individual.
Yeah.
And that's what the law states. It's the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. It's an individualized education program. So I'm happy that there were, you know, more mainstreamed classes started in the 80s, and that they're still having that as an option in the whole least restrictive environment sort of thing. So I apologize. I kind of stopped your flow of what you were talking about there. So go ahead with your high school education.
I agree. That was always good to know. I had a place to come back to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I needed that help, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And especially in the first few years, I was in the special ed class for reading and math. I felt like I had such a wonderful teacher there that really gave me a good foundation, you know,
mm-hmm.
to build on. And the other thing was, I got to do physical education. I got to do that with the kids with disabilities, and that was a lot of fun. You know, we always had fun. We didn't have to worry about, you know, the other kids being too hard. You know, it felt like we were able to just have fun and go outside and be like all the other kids, you know.
Yeah.
But they were able to adapt it for us, you know.
Yep. That's awesome. And that usually is the typical and some of the neurotypical people's favorite class is PE because yeah. It's so much fun. Exactly what you said. You get to play games, you get to socialize. You know, I mean, there's some structure to it. It's a little bit safer, like you said, maybe than recess. But I'm happy that that was also one of your favorite classes in school.
And then middle school was the same thing. I went to a school that had a physically impaired program. Now, in middle school, I had most of my classes in the typical classroom. But do they still call it typical and not? Like, I want to make sure I'm using the right language.
It depends on the state. You know, I like even and sometimes it's a personal thing. Like I refer to general education and special education, but a lot of people say, you know, general or regular education, and then like the PE, the music, the art, the computers. I refer to those as the specials classes. You know, and other people refer to them differently. So I don't really have the one right answer for you.
I was a kid, we would always say the regular kids.
Right.
I was thinking like how funny of a term, like the regular kids. Does that mean right. I'm not regular? it's always hard to know what the right language is.
Right.
But yeah, for middle school, I was in the general education for most of my classes. But there were two classes I was in with the special ed, and that was PE again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one was I had like a study period where I got to go in and get help. Somebody would help me if I wanted to just do my homework or help me study or get whatever help I needed, you know?
Yeah.
That was a good part of the day to just feel like I could get whatever help I needed. I also knew if I was in another class, I knew if I had any issues, I could always go talk with somebody in the special ed class, and they would help me get figured out, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. And so your school sounded like it was pretty positive for you for the most part. I mean, you know, we did talk about people talking down to you. But it sounds like, you know, you had a great, I think you said second and third grade teacher that really gave you that foundation for your reading and your math abilities. And then you were pretty much in junior high or middle school in the gen ed classes for all of your academics. So I wonder, though, you know, the concept of this is, you know, the limits that have been busted through. So I wonder how many people that you went to school with, your classmates, the teachers, administration, even the towns that you grew up in, had any idea that you would be an author. And not just an author, but a multi-time author. You are a motivational speaker. And so, you know, for someone who has the speech difficulties that you had younger, I wonder again, you know, did anyone ever think that you would be doing what you're doing today? And that's the concept of this show, is to showcase all the wonderful things that people can do, and that we shouldn't place limits on a person's potential. Did you ever feel growing up that there were people placing limits on your potential?
I think it was hard because, like I said, when I was in elementary school, I had a great teacher that really pushed us to be our best and to learn everything we could learn, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in middle school, like I said, I only spent a little part of the day with the special ed department.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I did notice that in that classroom, it would be combined with all grades, you know? And the teacher, she did the best she could. But when I would go in there, I would kind of feel like it seemed to me that some of the kids were not being challenged enough academically, you know?
Yeah.
And that always made me a little bit sad. Luckily I had an aide in that classroom who, she took me aside and she helped me with my math, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She kind of gave me private math lessons because that was my worst subject, you know?
Mine too.
And I think math is especially hard for somebody with a disability because I can't write out my numbers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it's hard to do math back then on the computer, you know.
Right.
Because you can't really line the numbers up, you know, and work out problems, you know. And so if I didn't have that aid helping me with math, I don't think I would have done that well in the general education class.
Oh my gosh, you can't believe how happy I am right now to hear you say that, because I recently posted something on my social media about having a paraprofessional with a student in the general education classroom. And there are so many people and that have commented on that, that that is more restrictive than taking the child out and putting them in a special education classroom. And I try to tell them, if a paraprofessional is trained correctly, automatically blanketly saying that they are more restrictive than being in a special education classroom is, in my opinion, asinine and very short-sighted, because of, you know, and yours is kind of a situation that I thought of. It's like, you know, there are people whose cognitive abilities are fine. And to pull them out of a general education classroom instead of giving them a paraprofessional to help them with the physical side of things, in your case, that to me is very inappropriate and not at all what the law subscribes for us, I think.
Yeah. So I do think, for me, it wasn't so much anybody telling me I could, you know, what I couldn't do. It was more about there was a handful of people that really stepped up to like show me what was possible, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she was one of those people that really wanted me to do my best, you know.
Yeah. Does she know how much she helped you? Are you like still in contact with her at all today?
I did see her later on when I was in high school, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she did, and she did know that she really did help me a lot, you know.
That's awesome. Do you remember her name? Would you mind sharing her name out?
Her name was Myrna Santiago.
All right, Myrna Santiago, thank you.
I also remember, you know, my seventh grade English teacher, Mr. Reedy, making a big impact on me, you know. And
how come?
He made English very interesting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I started to really enjoy, all the grammar stuff. And he would teach us grammar, and we would do spelling tests, you know. And he was just somebody I really enjoyed talking to, I think, because like you said, he never spoke down to me, you know.
Yeah, and you know, I taught seventh and eighth grade students some English and some math, and it's not easy to make either one of those subjects interesting. So kudos to, did you say it was Mr. Reedy?
Yeah. Yeah,
that he made that interesting, and probably without realizing the inspiration he was giving you at that time, inspired you to become the author that you are today.
And looking back now, I think that when I think about his class, I don't know if I appreciated it in the moment.
Sure.
But he had a lot of structure in his class.
Yeah.
And I still remember he had a schedule where like Monday was vocabulary. We got a list of vocabulary words.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday was reading, or he would teach about literature, you know. Wednesday and Thursday was grammar. And then Friday, we had the spelling test of the words we got on Monday.
Right. That's impressive.
Every week was just, so we knew we knew what we were going to do that day.
Right. That's awesome that you remember that. I mean, because I know you didn't just graduate, so it's been a few years since you had that seventh grade teacher.
But yeah, I only remember that, you know.
Yeah, that's so. So let's get into your family. Unfortunately, I have a feeling that there were people, whether they verbalized it to you or not, that never thought you would have a family. And so, you know, that's a limit I feel that you have busted through that maybe some people have had on you. And then also, let's talk about your books. You've got four of them behind you. So just tell us a little bit more about what your books are about. And how your family came to, you know, comes to help you and support you and what you do for them as well. And
I mean, I have my mom and dad. They're still there. No, they live about 20 minutes away from me. Mm-hmm. I have two young sisters. You know. They, you know, having a sibling with a disability is not always easy, I don't think, because I feel like maybe, you know, if you have a sibling with a disability, you might feel overlooked at times, you know, because.
Sure.
The person with a disability or the kid with a disability, they might need more attention, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I know my sisters probably have felt that, but they always took it well, you know.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, for a while, because they were younger than me, I would even think they really knew I had a disability.
Yeah, you're just their brother.
I remember other kids, like, the few times, I never really got bullied at all, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
But the few times or maybe a kid said something to me mean, you know, my sister would be like, you know, what's your problem? You know, like, see it and really understand why they were saying that about me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because, yeah, like I said, they grew up with you. You were their brother. You weren't a person with a disability. You were their brother, Michael.
Yeah.
And they accepted you exactly as you were, but other people didn't have that same perspective and that same viewpoint. So I've heard that from siblings before, that they, you know, because their sibling that was older than them had a disability, they didn't know any different.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it.
And then 10 years ago, I got married to a woman named Diana. And speaking of that kind of like people not knowing what you might be capable of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We've had our fair share of people, you know, thinking that she's My mom, you know, which is crazy because she's 2 years younger than me, and she does not look like my she could be my mom at all. But I think people just, I don't know, they just kind of go there, you know.
Right. It's one of those beliefs that people don't realize they have until they're faced with the challenge of, oh, I didn't know that I didn't think people with disabilities would be single all their lives. And I'm sure your wife doesn't look like your mother at all. So.
We did. One time, years ago, before we got married, we were at Panera, and we were actually planning. We were planning some things for a wedding, you know. Mm-hmm. So like we had the laptop out, and we were talking about who we were gonna invite to the wedding and everything, you know. And I get up to go to the bathroom, and I guess while I was gone, this lady at the table next to us, she asked Diana, she said something like, "Oh, like you gonna marry him?" And she was like, "Yeah." And she was like, "Are you gonna have kids with him?" Which was such a weird question. You know,
like, right, for a stranger to ask.
you would never ask that about anybody else, you know?
Exactly. That's a great point. Al wants to know where you proposed.
We have a place here called Lou Gardens. It's like a garden area where you walk around.
Okay.
And we had one of our first dates there. And that's where I did it.
All right. Well, good. I was hoping he wasn't like trying to get you into trouble. Like if he knew something that he was thinking, oh, Michael doesn't know. I'm going to ask him and then Diana's going to get mad.
But yeah. And then 3 years ago, We adopted a son named Emmett. And that was a whole other journey about adopting a child when you have a disability. That brought up a lot of fears in me. You know?
I never thought of that. Thank you for opening my eyes to that, because that's not an area I've considered. So we have a few minutes left. I definitely want to talk about your books, but thank you for bringing that up. I would love to maybe have you back and just have an episode about that, because
that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, definitely. So tell us about your books. Nobody Left Out. And while you're doing that, I'm going to pull up your website so that people can find where to purchase these books and learn more about you.
My books are mainly devotional books. And they mainly focused on the interactions that Jesus had with people that he met, you know. As I went through my life having a disability, I would also, you know, I grew up as a Christian, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted people to know the way that Jesus interacts with people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The way that when you read the Gospels, you know, whether or not you believe them, I encourage everybody to just give them a read and just see the way that Jesus loved people, you know?
Yeah.
And that,
yes, because he loved them beautifully, didn't he?
Yeah, and that one of my favorite stories is when he meets a man born blind, and his disciples, they ask him, you know, who's to blame for that, you know, like, mm-hmm. who sinned, you know. They want to know, like, what, you know,
right.
How could this bad thing happen? Why are there disabilities? Somebody must be to blame for this, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it's funny. Jesus really doesn't give. He gives an answer, but his answer doesn't really explain why people are born disabled. Instead, it's just like, basically, it's nobody's fault, and two, right. and two, God can still use them. You know, like, that's yes. basically what he says.
Yep. Absolutely.
Especially at that time period when people really believed that their sin could cause, you know, bad things physically right. to happen, you know?
Yeah. Do you watch the show The Chosen?
You know, I have seen part of it.
I really need
to watch the whole thing, because every clip I've seen makes me cry. I'm a little bit afraid to watch the whole series.
I'll be honest. I had a tough time with the first season. Once I got past the first season, I was like very much drawn in. But there is a scene of what you're talking about, and it was done so beautifully. It brought major tears to my eyes to just think of, you know, I mean, Jonathan Rumi, who plays Jesus, they couldn't have cast a better person, I don't think, first of all, but just everything about it, the cinematography of it, and just, I mean, his eyes, he just looks so compassionate when talking about, you know, and I forget which disciple it was that they say has the limp. And he talked about, like, how can you use me? Why aren't you healing me? You're sending me out to heal these other people, but you're not healing me.
And from what I understand, I believe that actor has a form of self-apology.
I think you're right. Now that you said that, I think I've heard that before.
I think the creator, who is it? Dallas Jenkins,
mm-hmm.
he decided to make that part of the story.
Yeah. It was just a really, really beautiful scene, I felt, and just I thought just very well done. And I'm glad that you brought that scripture up, because I do think even in today's world, people still think it's a bad thing, that somebody must have done something bad, that the child was born that way, or the child gets that diagnosis at some point. And
they think that the greatest thing that could happen is for that person to be, like, healed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I have very mixed feelings about that. Because on one hand, it would be awesome, you know, if I were one day healed of my CB. But in another sense, I would, you know, there are so many other things God has healed me of, you know, like on the inside, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, we as humans, we only look at the outside, don't we? But I 100% agree with you. There's so many things on the inside of us that God heals and sees. He sees our heart. He knows what we want to do and how we want to act. And we don't always say and do the right things, but that's where his grace comes in.
Yes.
And so I love that you have these books, and it looks like they're available through Amazon.
Yeah, they are.
Okay.
They all are.
And for those who are just listening and won't watch this in video format, his website is www.nobodyleftout.net. So make sure you're using .net. But also they can search for you and the books on Amazon just by typing in Nobody Left Out or Michael Murray. Either one of those will work to get to your books. So there's one more thing I want to talk to you about, because on your website, on the front page, is a picture of you with this huge smile and a glass of Zaxby tea. And I can't believe that your wife and child allow you to have the statement on there, because you say nothing makes me smile as big as a Zaxby tea. So I would think, I mean, I would say something to my husband if that was on his website. So
have you had that wish?
I'm not. I can't say that I have, but still, I don't
Where do you live?
I live in Southern Illinois.
Do they have that?
I don't think we do. I think there might be one in Chicago, which I go to Chicago regularly. I have seen a Zaxby's advertisement. I just can't think of where I've seen it.
You have Chick-fil-A, though, right?
I'm sorry, what?
You have Chick-fil-A, right?
Oh, yeah, we have Chick-fil-A. Yeah.
The sweet tea there is pretty good, too.
Now, do you have McAllister's Deli? Because McAllister's Deli sweet tea, I think, is pretty good as well.
I don't think we have that.
Oh, see, maybe that's our Zaxby's in this area, yeah. Maybe.
Well, you call me out, so I might have to think about that.
Well, you know, I'm coming to Florida next month. I wasn't planning on being in Orlando. I have to go to Tampa, but maybe we can meet in the middle, and I'll bring you a McAllister's Deli sweet tea, and you bring me Zaxby's.
You're going to Tampa?
Yep.
Hello.
Yep. So yeah, maybe I'll have to bring a McAllister's sweet tea with me and let you taste that. And we'll meet at a Zaxby's and I'll taste theirs and we can compare. Well, Michael, I have so enjoyed this conversation today, and yeah, absolutely. Maybe have to have you on another time and talk about that whole adoption process and being an adult with disabilities going through that. Because that's not truly something I ever thought about.
That'll be really fun.
Yeah. Well, and thank you to everyone, Patrick, Al, Fran, that has joined and commented today. I know there were other people watching. There's been some other comments or some likes and things. So I know there were other people. I appreciate everyone who has watched. Be sure to like or subscribe to the channel, whether you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, will depend on which one of those you need to do, so that you don't miss an episode just like this one of Hashtag No Limits, where we are talking with people who are busting through limits, and we're all making the world better one lesson at a time. Thanks so much, Michael. I've so enjoyed this. Have a great day.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Keno is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykeno.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykeno.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.